We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all of these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WYNNBET.com to start winning. And away we go, episode 160 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Wednesday, October 6th, 2021. What is the day on which the Washington football team begins its practice week for this Sunday afternoon's game against the New Orleans Saints at FedEx Field at 1? No, the DEA did not raid Washington's practice facility on Tuesday, at least as best as we can tell. So that's a good thing. Look, as I always say, any day on which the DEA does not raid Washington's practice facility is a good day, okay? We take our victories where we can get them. But hello and welcome to another installment of the show. Coming up, a special guest, Taylor Heinicke's collegiate head coach, former Old Dominion University head coach, Bobby Wilder. He is tremendous when it comes to talking Heinicke. You're going to get a lot out of this interview. Excellent breakdown of what's been going on with Heinicke from an X's and O's perspective. You're going to hear Coach Wilder reveal something about something that Heinicke was told by Ron Rivera. If you're like me and you've been wondering why Heinicke on some recent scrambles seemingly has been sliding too early, you're going to get a better understanding of that. And wait until you hear what Coach Wilder has to say about Chase Young, Bobby Wilder on Taylor Heinicke, and a few other items coming up 2 segments from now. That's because next segment, I'm going to get into some roster moves that Washington made on Tuesday, including signing a kicker to the practice squad, Chris Blewett. Yes, Chris Blewett. Is he the eventual replacement for Dustin Hopkins? Not so fast on that. Also, I'm going to explore where Washington is at with two things that came up during the 34-30 win at the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. Fourth down attempts and two-point conversion attempts. One of those things continues to go well. The other thing, not so much. And I'll talk some Nationals. They made some news on Tuesday. Yeah, their season just ended on Sunday, but the Nats on Tuesday announced the re-signing of one of the biggest surprises of the Nats' oh-so-bad 2021 season, Alcides Escobar. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. So let's get warmed up for a conversation with Bobby Wilder. Little Taylor Heinicke talk here. Email from Ryan O'Connell on Taylor Heinicke. Writes Ryan, I have a comparison for you regarding the Taters. Yes, my name for the haters of Taylor Heinicke. The Tay-Tay haters, continues Ryan. The situation with Heinicke is a lot like he who must not be named. Their styles of play are different, but both are underdog stories of guys who weren't supposed to be this good. Both are polarizing and lead people to see what they want to see. Kirk jerks, like us, saw a guy who was throwing with accuracy, pushing the ball downfield more than people realized, and consistently operating the offense like the B-plus quarterback that he is. A game manager, yes, but as we know, that's not the worst thing, and I'm a little bit more process-oriented. Yes, there you go, Ryan. You call for your drop, I must give you your drop. Continues Ryan. Kirk's detractors kept moving the goalposts from he's just a backup to he doesn't suck, but he's not worth $20 million to, well, he's not worth $24 million to, well, he can't lead a fourth quarter drive to, he can't beat a winning team to, he can't win in the playoffs. Meanwhile, he's done all of those things and is off to a great start this year, but it doesn't count in their eyes. If you ask 100 football fans and analysts if they were right in their initial opinions of Kirk, 100 will say yes. Our memories and perceptions are funny like that. We want to be right, and we see what we want to see, so that we are. As for Tay-Tay, the haters gonna hate. Truth be told, we don't know if he'll be as good as Kirk yet, or better or worse, but mark my words, 100 out of 100 people will be, quote, right, end quote, about him, no matter what. Excellent email, Ryan. You made a lot of good points. Kirk and Taylor obviously are very different quarterbacks, but there are definite parallels between the two in terms of each guy's like rise to being Washington's starting quarterback, right? And the initial perceptions of each guy not being good enough. What happens so often in these situations, and you alluded to this, and we're all guilty of this. I'm sure I'm guilty of this at times with certain things, is confirmation bias. Confirmation bias, the tendency to interpret new evidence as confirmation of one's existing beliefs or theories. We all want to be right. Nobody likes being wrong. I don't care what anybody says. Nobody likes being wrong. And so we have an initial opinion, an initial take, and we then twist and turn and shape and form whatever it is we see to make it so that our initial opinion, our initial take, is correct. This is why the Taylor Heinicke haters, the Taters, keep picking every little nit in his performances, because the harping on those nits makes it so that the Taters can say, you see, he isn't fit to be an NFL quarterback after all. As I have said about Taylor Heinicke, be open-minded. I'm not sure of what he can or can't be. All that I've ever done is evaluate what he has done as a Washington quarterback. And what he has done as a Washington quarterback is play well in every game, with the exception of that loss at the Buffalo Bills in week 3. And it's not like he was awful in that game. He just wasn't good enough in that game. He threw two bad interceptions in that game. With Taylor Heinicke, the only thing that's for sure is that nothing's for sure. The possibilities right now are all over the place with what he ultimately is. Well, something that is for sure is that it matters. Who sells your home? You need a real estate agent who's smart, reliable, and isn't going to rip you off with the commission. John Grandland of Real Broker checks all of those boxes. John Grandland understands the real estate market in the DMV. John Grandland has sold countless homes and condos in the area, including for listeners of this podcast. And John offers commission flex.
Position flex.
Yes, Ron, just like position flex. What is commission flex, you ask? It's simple. Flexible commission rates. The days of some flat commission rate, regardless of how easy it is to sell your home, are over. 6%, 7%, 8%. Don't accept that. John G is changing the game with this groundbreaking concept of commission flex. Not every house requires the same amount of work or money spent marketing, so why should you pay the same fees? It doesn't make sense. It's never made sense. If your house is going to sell in 6 minutes, don't pay 6%. John Grandlin will put a marketing plan together for you that will maximize your home's value and help you keep more of your hard-earned equity in your pocket. And John has a menu of commission packages from which you can choose, including, by the way, selling your home for free. Yeah, you heard that right. For free. Zero commission. Some conditions do apply, but interviewing John Grandlin is a total no-brainer. He can come by your house, give you a step-by-step plan on what to do to get top dollar, and maybe even more importantly, what not to do, so you don't spend needlessly, and there's never any obligation to list or sell. If you need to sell your home and aren't sure to whom to turn, if you've been trying to sell your home and you're not satisfied with how things are going, if you're even just thinking about selling your home, do yourself a favor. Call John Grandlin and just see what he can do for you. Look, this is a phone call that could make and or save you tens of thousands of dollars. You have nothing to lose. Call John G now. The phone number is 703-537-6747. Very easy going, very easy to talk to, but this is someone who knows what he's doing, and this is someone who will take you in the right direction. When you talk to John Grandlin, make sure that you tell him that Al Galdi sent you, and make sure that you ask John Grandlin about what you keep hearing about on the Al Galdi podcast. Commission flex. See what John G can do for you. That phone number again, 703-537-6747, or visit johngsellsforfree.com. That's johngsellsforfree.com. John Grandlin. Nobody will do a better job of selling your home, and remember, he is the originator of Commission Flex.
Position Flex.
Yes, Ron. Just like Position Flex. All right. Before we get to my conversation with Taylor Heinicke's collegiate head coach, former Old Dominion head coach Bobby Wilder, let's get into the Washington football team news from Tuesday. So, first of all, Washington placed two players on the reserve injured list. John Bostic and Torrey McTyre. No surprises there. Each guy suffered a serious injury in the 34-30 win at the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. Bostic suffered a torn pectoral muscle. McTyre suffered a torn ACL. The corresponding roster moves to those guys going on the reserve injured list were Washington signing linebacker Jordan Kanashik and corner Danny Johnson from the practice squad to the active roster. Jordan Kanashik is like the dream player for Ron Rivera. A, Kanashik went to Cal, just like Ron did. B, Kanashik was with the Carolina Panthers, so they signed him as an undrafted free agent in April 2019. C, Kanashik is a linebacker, which of course was Ron's position when he was a player. Ron has dreams about guys like Jordan Kanashik. Kanashik was with Washington for a good chunk of last season. Danny Johnson, we of course know well. Washington on August 31st released Johnson in the cut down to 53, but did then sign him to the practice squad. Washington this past offseason re-signed Johnson, but not before non-tendering him. He could have been a restricted free agent. Washington chose not to tender him, thus making him an unrestricted free agent, but Washington did then re-sign Johnson. Washington initially signed Johnson as an undrafted free agent at a Southern University, April 2018. This is his fourth season with Washington. He last regular season played in 14 games, but did not play on a single defensive snap the entire season. He was Washington's primary kickoff returner last season for a second time in three seasons. Look, neither Kanashik nor Johnson is expected to play much, if at all, moving forward. I mean, the hope would be that you stay healthy enough to where neither guy has to play much, if at all. Bostic being out will mean more Jamin Davis and some Kalik Hudson, maybe even a good bit of Kalik Hudson. We'll see how much Kalik ends up playing. He has yet to play on a single defensive snap this season. I'm also now very curious to see if Washington is going to make a play for Jalen Smith. We had some at least somewhat surprising news on Tuesday. The Cowboys have decided to part ways with veteran linebacker Jalen Smith. He had seen limited snaps this season, both in base packages and in nickel. But, you know, Jalen Smith was the Cowboys' leading tackler in each of the last two regular seasons. His reduced playing time seems to be mainly about the Cowboys now being deeper at linebacker. The Cowboys this past offseason signed Keanu Neal in free agency and took two linebackers in the 2021 NFL draft, and Micah Parsons in the first round and Jabril Cox in the fourth round. But if I'm Washington, I absolutely kick the tires on Jalen Smith. You might be able to get some good mileage out of him, and especially given the state of things for Washington at linebacker, a state of not very good, you should be open to anyone right now in terms of trying to upgrade that position group. What happens with McTyre being out is less clear, because we need to see where we're at with Benjamin St. Juice. The reason that McTyre was Washington's number three corner in the win at the Falcons was that St. Juice was inactive due to a concussion. If St. Juice remains out for this Sunday against the New Orleans Saints at FedEx Field, then that likely means that we'll see Daryl Roberts as Washington's number three corner. He has yet to play on a single defensive snap this season. Roberts, for the win at the Falcons, was active for the first time in four games this season, but he did not play on any of Washington's defensive snaps. Now, also on Tuesday, Washington signed a kicker. Now, the kicker was signed to the practice squad, not to the active roster, and the kicker has never kicked in an NFL regular season game. The kicker's name is Chris Blewett. Yes, Chris Blewett. His last name is Blewett. He's a kicker, and his last name is Blewett. As Adam Sandler said in the movie Billy Madison,
"You blew it!"
Yes, you blew it. I am sure that Chris Blewett has heard the joke about his last name about 50,000 times in his life. But man, that is something else. I mean, come on. He's a kicker, and his last name is Blewett.
You blew it!
Yes, exactly. But like I said, Chris Blewett has never kicked in an NFL regular season game. He was with the Chicago Bears from March 2019 to June 2019. He participated in a Pittsburgh Steelers rookie minicamp in 2017 on a tryout basis, but Blewett has never kicked in an NFL regular season game. So as much as we're all fed up with Dustin Hopkins' inconsistency, I mean, you wanted to scream with him missing those two extra point attempts in the win at the Falcons on Sunday. Would you want Chris Blewett over Dustin Hopkins as Washington's kicker? Like, it's one thing to be extremely frustrated with Dustin Hopkins. We all are. But it's another thing to pull the trigger on this, cut Hopkins, and go with, say, Chris Blewett as your new kicker. Ron Rivera, during his day after the game Zoom press conference on Monday, answered a question about his position on Dustin Hopkins' job security moving forward with that very cryptic line of, quote, "He's our kicker and we'll leave it at that," end quote. Here's the audio.
"Well, he's our kicker and we'll leave it at that."
Very telling answer, I thought, from Don Ron. Well, if Hopkins is one miss away from being cut, and Chris Blewett is, in fact, the next man up, I don't know about that, okay? I'm not so certain about that one. So Chris Blewett was a kicker at Pitt from 2013 through 2016, but Blewett, over his final two seasons at Pitt, 2015 and 2016, went just 25 of 40 on field goals. 25 of 40. That's it. 15 missed field goal attempts over his final two seasons at Pitt. And yes, Pitt does play in some bad weather. But still, that's not a sparkling stat. 15 missed field goal attempts over his final two seasons at Pitt. Chris Blewett is a local. He's from Northern Virginia. He went to West Potomac High School in Alexandria, Virginia. You know, I was thinking about this. I wonder if Ron signed Blewett to the practice squad just to make us all shut up about Hopkins. You know, maybe Ron was like, "I'll sign this guy Blewett, who has a resume so underwhelming that it'll make everyone appreciate old D-Hop more and beg me not to cut D-Hop." But yeah, for now, Chris Blewett is Washington's Dustin Hopkins insurance. Remember, we just went through this with Eddie Pinheiro. He was on Washington's practice squad from September 3rd to September 11th. I will say this about Dustin Hopkins. Yes, he is maddeningly inconsistent. And yes, Washington's extreme loyalty to him over the years has been very odd. But you can do worse than Dustin Hopkins. That's part of why he's lasted for so long. This idea of, well, we can do worse than Dustin Hopkins. And the danger in cutting Hopkins for an Eddie Pinheiro or a Chris Blewett or anyone else is that you could end up worse off at kicker. Now, that's not a good enough reason to not move on from Dustin Hopkins. I'm not a believer in the thing of, well, you could do worse than him. Well, okay, how about you do better than him, okay? But you do have to be aware of this idea of, yeah, if you cut Dustin Hopkins, there is that risk of the next guy isn't even as good as Dustin Hopkins. The last thing that you want with this Hopkins situation is for Washington to cut him and then have a kicker who's worse than Hopkins was. In other words, you don't want to blow it.
You blew it!
Exactly. Thank you. Our special guest, Taylor Heinicke's collegiate head coach, former Old Dominion head coach, Bobby Wilder, is up next.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right. Well, very pleased to welcome to the Al Galdi podcast right now a special guest. He is a man who knows Washington football team quarterback Taylor Heinicke quite well. Former Old Dominion football head coach Bobby Wilder. He was ODU's head coach from 2009 through 2019. Heinicke was a quarterback for ODU from 2011 through 2014. It was with Coach Wilder and Heinicke that ODU made the transition from the FCS to the FBS beginning with the 2013 season. It was with Coach Wilder that Heinicke for the 2012 season won the Walter Payton Award as the best player in the FCS. Coach, it's great to talk to you again. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Al. Excited to be with you and your listeners today.
So what has it been like for you these last few weeks watching Taylor do as he has done as Washington's starting quarterback?
It's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. I've been communicating with him via message just to stay in touch with him, and really excited for him, really happy for him. And in my opinion, Al, he's just going to continue to get better. I don't think Washington fans have seen the best of him to this point.
In your communications with Taylor, do you get the sense that he's in a good place, that he's feeling confident, that he's really ready to seize this opportunity? Because from afar, it feels like he is in a good place and he is really ready to pounce, and he's done quite well so far, obviously.
He is. He's in a really good place, but I'll tell you something, Al. He is locked in and focused, and he continues to treat this like his back's against the wall. He knows that the NFL's, you know, it stands for not for long, and he's experienced that throughout his 7-year career. So he's in no way satisfied or feels comfortable with his place in the NFL. He feels like every game, every quarter, every drive, every play, he's got to produce in order to stay in the position that he's staying in. But he is definitely gaining confidence with the early success that he's having.
So of the two wins, week 2 over the Giants, week 4 at Atlanta, which game was the better game for Taylor, in your opinion?
I feel like it was the Atlanta game, and I say that because it was hostile environment, on the road, all his family and friends there. They fall down 10-0, and it's just not looking good. The defense can't get off the field on third down. So as a quarterback, you're on the bench. Then, hey, it's 3rd and 13. You get up. You maybe make a couple throws. Then Atlanta converts. Then you sit back down. I mean, all these things that were just were mentally challenging for him, he handled it. And then, you know, what I've seen him do his entire career when he played for me at Old Dominion, he just finds a way to lead his team to victory. And what I've been telling people, Al, when he did it in college, it was one thing. Now he's doing it against the best players in the world. And I really feel like that Atlanta game was just, it was tremendous growth for him in terms of what he had to do on the road as opposed to the Giants win at home.
You know, you talk about finding a way, and we certainly saw that in that win at the Falcons with the two miracle fourth quarter touchdown passes. And I mean, it can sound cliche, right? Like he finds a way, but he does. Like there does seem to be something about him to where he finds ways to make plays. You're as used to it as anyone, but how amazed are you to see him continuing to do this now at the NFL level?
I'm not amazed. I'm not surprised. I'm proud, and I'm excited, and I'm happy for him, and even I've got a little bit of wow factor going right now, because like I said, he's doing it against the best players in the world. But he continues to have growth, and that's what, as a coach, that's what I'm excited to see. That's what you hear Ron Rivera keeps asking for, and I know maybe fans, media, like, here he goes again, that's coach speak, but as a coach, you're so locked in, especially a head coach. You're so locked in on and focused on just seeing a little bit of growth each week out of your team. And I don't know if you heard Rivera in the locker room after the game when he was handing out game balls, but he's talking about that growth, just trying to get a little better. And, you know, he sees it on offense. He sees it in clutch situations late in the game in the fourth quarter, but he's not seeing it from his defense consistently. And I want to point out, Al, something about the defense. Let's think back to the opening game against the Chargers. Well, we saw what the Chargers did to the Raiders. Chargers are a pretty damn good football team, and Washington had them beat. Washington was up 16-13 with the ball, and then fumbles on their own 3-yard line, and that's how the Chargers win the game. So when you think about it, Al, this team could easily be 3-1, and everybody locked in and focused and blaming the defense, but they could be 3-1 if the offense didn't lose that first game. So I think that growth will come. I think they'll get a little bit better. And as long as Taylor continues to do that, they're going to have opportunities to win games.
talking Taylor Heinicke with his collegiate head coach, former ODU head coach Bobby Wilder. So with the growth that you're seeing in Taylor Heinicke, where are you seeing growth in particular?
Well, the number one area that I'm seeing it right now is in his processing information. And what I mean by that, I'll give you a great example. The touchdown pass to win the game to McKissick, that was his fifth read. And I know some people, last year I did an interview on the radio out of Washington after the Tampa Bay game when people were just totally amazed with what he did, you know, basically coming off his sister's couch and from classes at Old Dominion to almost beat Tampa Bay, the eventual Super Bowl champions. And what I talked about in that interview was that he was the only five-read guy I'd ever coached in 32 years. I'd never had a five-read guy. I'd had a bunch of three-read guys, meaning they could go one, two, three, you know, before they took off and ran the ball or got sacked. Well, you saw on the touchdown to McKissick, that was his fifth read. They had a flood concept coming from right to left. They covered it. Atlanta covered it. So he was scanning it, and unbelievable protection by the O-line, but he didn't panic. He didn't just take off. He didn't throw it into that coverage, into the flood concept. He looked down, and then he was looking for J.D. And what J.D. did is he wasn't in the middle of the field. He slipped out to the right because nobody was there. And if you go back and watch the play out, what happens is the Mike linebackers – got J.D. McKissick, and then he sees Taylor go to the left and thinks he's going to run, so he breaks coverage. And Taylor comes back to it. So that's an example, Al, of what I'm seeing as someone who watched him play for 4 years, is he's processing information really quickly. You look at the next-gen stats in the NFL, and, you know, he's down near the bottom of the league in terms of holding the ball too long, but what I would say to that stat is that he's only been sacked three times. Great job by the O-line. But he's so adept at moving away from pressure as he keeps his eyes downfield. So he's avoiding sacks. He runs when he has to. But that processing of information, Al, and getting to that fifth read to win a football game is something that so few NFL quarterbacks can do, not college quarterbacks. NFL quarterbacks, and you've had some guys in Washington like RG3 and Dwayne Haskins and others that they can't get to that many reads that quickly, and that's something Taylor's doing really well right now, and if that continues, he'll continue to have success.
Is processing speed the most important trait for a quarterback to have?
Absolutely, 100%. You can talk about arm strength. You know, he doesn't have, comparably speaking to other NFL quarterbacks, he doesn't have a strong arm. So how is Taylor Heinicke having any success in the NFL at all? He's not 6'4". He's 6 foot tall. He doesn't have a rocket arm. He didn't play at a Power 5 school. How is he? This is his seventh year. This is his sixth team. And so how is this guy having any success? It's because he processes information really well. He can do it fast. The average QB pocket time in the NFL is 2.6 seconds, meaning that's on average what you have before you get swallowed up by one of those 300-pound creatures. And he's processing that information so quickly. And here's what he does. I'll break it down even more for you and your listeners. He can eliminate two reads before the ball snapped. And what I mean by that, if he's got a primary route concept that Scott Turner's given him in his ear, he's called in the huddle, and he looks and he sees a coverage that's going to rotate to that read side and take away his first two reads, he'll come off that before he takes the snap, and then he'll go to his third, fourth, fifth read. So all we see as fans, or all the analysts see, are, okay, he threw the ball to the right side, he got it out on time. Well, maybe the initial read was to the left side. That's how good he is at processing. He's smart. Remember, he's an engineering math major, so numbers, shapes, that all makes sense to Taylor Heinicke. In his head, he can quantify numbers quicker than we can. And that allows him to process it quick. That allows him to get the ball out of his hands fast.
That's outstanding. Bobby Wilder breaking it down scientifically here on the Al Galdi podcast. I want to get your take on this. So Ron Rivera, the day after the loss in Buffalo in Week 3, made the comment that he wanted Taylor to, quote, do things in more of a game manager way, end quote. I mean, to me, Ron was saying that he wants Taylor to make good decisions. I didn't think that Ron was trying to like handcuff Taylor or anything, but what did you make of the game manager comment? What do you think when you hear that phrase, game manager?
Oh, I knew exactly what Ron was talking about. He was talking about, and you said it, Al, you broke it down, you picked up on it. It was just make better decisions with the football. Don't feel like down 21-0, you have to make something happen. You know, a couple times he threw the ball into the middle of the field into coverage and it got intercepted. And, you know, Ron's point on that, which is the same point I'd make to Taylor all the time in college, is, you know, take off and run, slide, get 5 yards, add 5 yards to the punt, or throw the ball away. But let's punt the ball and let's give the other team 75-80 yard field. That's what he was speaking to in that point. And Taylor picked up on it. I mean, Taylor even said it himself in the post-game comments that he knew that he could not or he cannot the rest of the way force things when they're down. And I'll go back to the Atlanta game. I mean, Washington's been getting down in football games so that they right away they're down 10 points to Atlanta, but you watched him. He didn't force the ball in that situation. Yeah, he threw the ball into some tight windows. The touchdown pass to McLaurin to make it 10-7. Al, if you go back and look at that, the safety for Atlanta, that he's within inches of the ball when Terry catches it in the back left corner. That's the NFL. There's things that are going to be really tight. So he throws it into some tight windows, but in that game, he didn't throw the ball in the middle of the field into coverage, and I thought that was tremendous growth for him. I thought he was listening to what Ron Rivera and Scott Turner are telling him that he needs to do to improve. And let's also keep this in mind, Al. You're talking the Tampa game last year. He comes in the second quarter, I believe, against the Chargers this year, then Giants, Bills, Falcons. So we're talking about a guy that's played 3.5 games this year, 4.5 total. He's not unlike a rookie from the standpoint of he doesn't have a lot of on-field actual full-speed work. So he's still growing. We still haven't seen, you know, what his ceiling can be. He's not a veteran NFL quarterback, even though he's been in the league for 7 years. So he'll pick up on what Ron says, and he'll get better at that, Al.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, the people who are trying to put limits on what Heinicke can be in the NFL, I'm like, no, man, let's keep seeing this. You know, let's see where this ride takes us with the idea of making good decisions. So something like the second touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin in the win at the Falcons, that fourth quarter one, that desperation miracle touchdown pass. As a coach, if you're watching that tape with Taylor, do you praise him because the play worked out and ended up being a spectacular play? Do you tell him not to do that again? What's the coaching point on a play like that?
Well, this is something that, you know, and Taylor did this at Old Dominion. Go back to probably the biggest win we had early at Old Dominion, 2011. We beat James Madison. They were nationally ranked. They were picked to win the Colonial Athletic Association. And we had a fourth down and six. We had a bootleg called. He mishandled the snap, dropped it. They blitzed him. He rolled out to his left. The guy chased him. He spun around, came back to his right. He backed up 10 yards to about the 45-yard line, and just when he was about to get drilled, he threw a jump ball into the end zone to Larry Pinkard, a good receiver we had, who had probably a four-year career in the NFL, and Larry went up between two defenders and caught it, and that play reminded me so much of what Taylor did Sunday with McLaurin. Now, he's going to try to make plays like that. He's not going to do it a lot. He's not going to do it all the time. And his answer after when he was asked about that was, I felt like Terry would make that play. So I don't think he throws that ball to just anybody. And I'm not taking anything away from the other Washington receivers. But right now, Terry McLaurin is playing at a level, Al, that's probably one of the top 10, maybe even top 5 receivers in the NFL right now. He's playing at that high of a level. So Taylor, again, think of, like I keep telling you, Al, he processes things in his head so fast and he does the math in his head so fast that his brain, I guarantee you, his brain on that play said, that's Terry McLaurin in the back of the end zone and the guy who's back there with him is not as good as him. So I'm going to put the ball up in the air and give him a chance to catch it, and it worked out. But again, I don't think he's going to do that with just anybody. I think that was because it was Terry McLaurin in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, that's a great point. And like you said, McLaurin is playing at such a high level. So with Taylor as a runner over these last few games, it was interesting. He, in the win over the Giants, barely ran and beat the Giants from the pocket. He has been back to running more in each of these last two games. He has taken some stiff shots, and Ron Rivera has said, you know, Taylor needs to avoid those. He also, at times, it feels like, is maybe sliding a smidge too early and is not getting the first down, like on a, say, a third and seven, he'll get a six-yard scramble, that kind of thing. I know it's tough, right, because he is trying to avoid the unnecessary hits. Watching him from the standpoint of him as a runner recently, what is standing out to you?
Oh, he is definitely not the same runner he was in college and not the same runner he was against Tampa Bay. You know, he's been told in a very direct manner. Privately, he's been told in a very direct manner. Now, publicly, I know they're trying to say, hey, we just want to protect him, this and that. But privately, he's been told, look, you know, Fitz is out right now. We can't lose you to a 5-yard gain where you don't slide. And they've really done a good job of getting him out to understand the big picture right now. And the big picture is, you know, we need you to be healthy and continue to grow and get better. So they've pointed out from a big picture standpoint that a 5-yard game isn't worth losing you for 5 games. That's the math they've done with him in his head. And he's learning from it. He's trying to adjust, Al. He's trying his best to, you know, still run and get the first down and get down. He's trying not to get hit because that's what they're telling him to do. You know, if you're going to take off and run, get what you can get. But if you can't get out of bounds, in no way do you take a hit. So it's just a little awkward for him right now. He's trying to figure out how to do that the best way he can. And I know people, when we watch it on TV, Al, we go, well, why did he slide that quick? Or why did he get down there? I promise you, I played quarterback, coached it my whole life. When you're running down the field and there's guys on your left and your right, it's not that easy to try to figure out exactly when do I slide.
Yeah,
because these guys are so fast, they have such unbelievable closing speed, and the number one thing they want to do is hit the quarterback. That's how defenders are taught. That's how I taught my defensive players at Old Dominion. You can impact the entire game with one hit on the quarterback. You know, if you get a good legal hit on the quarterback and he's got to come out of the game, you just changed everything. Because the biggest drop-off, Al, in all of sport, is going from your starting quarterback to your backup. There's no bigger drop-off at any position in sport, in my opinion. You know, your backup wide receiver can come in. You can play another lineman, a D-lineman. When your quarterback goes out, your starting quarterback, that's a tremendous drop-off, particularly if you have a legitimate quarterback. Like, imagine Tom Brady going down in Tampa Bay. I mean, is Blaine Gabbert going to play to the same level? So he's understanding that. They're making those points to him, and I think he's getting much better with it, Al.
Makes sense. You know as well as anyone how good of a relationship that Taylor Heinicke has with Scott Turner. What has jumped out to you when it comes to Scott's play calling with Taylor as Washington's quarterback?
I think Scott's getting more adept at how to call the game for him. And when I say that, what I mean, Al, is he's giving him, I don't know if you picked up on this, but the very first play of the game against Atlanta, they come out no backs. And you know, it's a multiple read play, the very first play of the game. Well, you'd think with a guy who's only played, you know, started 3 games this year and 4 games total for Washington, you might come out in 2 back and maybe it's just a handoff, a lead play, you know, an off tackle play, a play action pass. No, it's empty. We're in empty, so the defense knows we're going to throw the ball right now. And my point is Scott's comfort level with Taylor and his ability to read the full field, his ability to protect the ball. Scott's getting very comfortable with that. And Al, when I talk about full field reads, you don't see that a lot with an inexperienced quarterback. For example, you know, Justin Field right now and Trevor Lawrence, you know, these younger quarterbacks, they're not getting full field reads. They're getting area reads or object receiver where it's 1 to 2 receivers as well. They should. They're young. They're just in the NFL. Whereas Taylor's getting full field reads. He's throwing game-winning touchdown passes on his 5th read. So that's telling Scott, and I believe that's going to grow even more, Al. I believe with that touchdown pass, the check down to J.D. McKissick to win the game, Scott's looking at that and going, wow, you know, he got to his fifth read on this play. Let's design more things that allow for him to have not one option, not two, not three, but five pretty good options in the package. So I guarantee you Scott and the other guys are in the lab right now trying to come up with more concepts for him that are five read concepts.
I love it. Final topic, just to get away from Taylor Heinicke, you mentioned Washington's defense. Do you have a theory for what's going on with this defense? I mean, the defense has all of this talent. You have two very well-established defensive coaches in Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio, and yet the defense has really struggled, especially on third downs. Ron Rivera has talked about guys not adhering to the scheme. What do you make of what's going on with this Washington football team defense?
Oh, I see exactly what Ron is talking about, and I see how frustrating it is for Jack Del Rio right now. I mean, and the one thing I would say to your listeners, Al, and I know I'm a coach. I'm going to sound like I'm defending the coach. I'm not. I'll tell you when a coach isn't doing a good job, but Jack Del Rio is one hell of a football coach. He's been one hell of a football coach his entire career. Look what he did with that defense last year. Ron Rivera is an outstanding football coach and expertise on defense. And I see exactly what Ron Rivera is saying, and I see how frustrating it is for Jack Del Rio right now because they won't adhere to the scheme, especially those front four guys. And Chase Young's a prime example of somebody who and I'm not ripping on Chase Young. I think he's special. I think he cares. I think he wants to win badly. But Chase Young is out of position 50% of the time in their scheme right now in his pass rush, in his lanes. So he's too far up the field and opens a lane inside, or he comes underneath the tackle trying to make a sack when he's supposed to be the contained player. And that's just one example. It's happening all over the field. They're having these individual breakdowns where guys, and I think it's a product right now of their pressing, Al. They're trying so hard to make plays. They're frustrated. And now it's in their head on third down. I mean, there was one drive against Atlanta. It was like a 3rd-and-5, 3rd-and-8, 3rd-and-13. They converted for a touchdown. And I looked at the slumped shoulders on the field of the defenders and just thought, you know what, these guys right now, it's in their head. And they need something good to happen, Al. And I know that sounds fundamental, but the momentum aspect of playing defense in football. Look at the Dallas Cowboys right now on defense. I mean, they've got a rookie that's out there making ridiculous plays. They've got a new D coordinator in there and a new scheme. Well, he didn't reinvent the wheel. I mean, football's pretty much the same on defense. In the NFL, most of it's man coverage. So they're just playing with confidence right now. The Cowboys are confident on defense, and Washington right now lacks confidence. And if guys would just stick to the scheme and just commit to it and say, you know what, I'm going to stop trying to do it all myself. I'm going to play the scheme that's called and just stick to that, they will have success. Because again, I go back, Al, to just 3 weeks ago, one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL, the Chargers, had 20 points. And it was really 13 points that they scored against this Washington defense. So it's there. We've all seen it. We all know it's there. They've just got to get back to doing their job individually, and that'll help the entire unit get better. One thing I just wanted to point out to you quickly, we didn't get to the schedule.
Yeah.
And I did some homework on this, and I think Washington fans need to grab your butts with both hands here the next 9 weeks, because this is the hardest schedule in the NFL over the next 9 weeks. Nobody on the schedule has a losing record. It's 24-9 overall, I believe, Al, with the next nine. I'm talking about the Saints, the Chiefs, the Packers, Broncos, Buccaneers, Panthers, Seahawks, Raiders, Cowboys. That's what's coming in the next 9 weeks. And if I realistically, Al, if I said to you that this could possibly be 3-6, could be 4-5, 5-4 would be outstanding, in my opinion, against that schedule over the next 9 weeks. Now, Washington fans would be happy with that. They'd say, come on, coach, 3-6, 4-5. But nobody in the NFL, not one of the other 31 teams, has that schedule over the next 9 weeks. So right now, to me, the pressure is on the defense. They have got to pick it up. They have got to play better, because we may have to win some 17-14 games, or games like the Chargers game, 20-16. That's more to me what should be happening with Washington's defense right now. And that is a brutal schedule, Al. The next 9 weeks, then after that, it's, you know, at the Eagles, at the Cowboys, home to the Eagles, home to the Giants. So, you know, that obviously could be a really nice finish. But right now, Washington fans and this football team's got to buckle up, because the next 9 weeks is going to be an absolute bear of a schedule.
No doubt. I would take 4-5 in a heartbeat. You just need to stay afloat until you get to the end of the schedule, the last five regular season games, all NFC East games. And if you're just in the mix, you can make hay with those division games at the end of the season. But you're right. This is a 9-game gauntlet that begins on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints at FedEx Field.
Yep. Hold on with both hands and survive. Just try to get a little better. Get some third down stops, which there's no way possible that with the NFL record 51% third down conversions for a season, that this, I think we're at 60% right now on defense. There's no way that's going to hang. So I know they're going to get better on third down. They'll get stops. They'll get off the field. They'll get turnovers. But they're going to have to, in that next 9 games, I think this defense is going to have to give up 24, 23 points or less for Washington to get out of this 4-5 or 5-4, because it's going to be extremely hard for the offense to, you know, put up the 30 points they did against the Giants or the 34 they did against the Falcons. That's just going to be an awful lot to ask these next 9 weeks, Al.
Great stuff. Former Old Dominion head coach Bobby Wilder. You can follow him on Twitter at CoachWilder353. Always love getting your insights, Coach. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it was awesome being with you, Al. Be with you anytime. Hang in there, Washington fans. Taylor's going to get better every week.
Looking forward to that being the case. Excellent perspective from Bobby Wilder on Taylor Heinicke. That kind of insight, not at all common. Unfortunately, something that is common is skin cancer. Skin cancer actually is the most common of all cancers. In fact, skin cancer accounts for nearly half of all cancer cases in the United States. If you have concerns about your skin, if you are dealing with skin cancer, if you have had skin cancer and haven't seen a doctor in a while, always know that Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland are there for you. Dr. Verghese is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon. He is one of the nation's premier dermatologists. Dr. Verghese is a big Washington football team fan, big listener of this podcast, and operating under his direction is the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. The Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland diagnoses and treats a broad range of acute and chronic skin conditions, including skin cancer. Dr. Verghese and his team offer state-of-the-art treatments for skin cancer, including something that's a game-changer, superficial radiation therapy, or SRT. SRT is an alternative to surgical procedures for basal cell and squamous cell skin cancers. SRT is safe, effective, and non-surgical. You see, having skin cancer doesn't mean having to have surgery, and the downtime and side effects, cosmetic and otherwise, that come with surgery. You have options. SRT is an option, and Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer the option of SRT, unlike many other dermatology practices in the area, and SRT is covered by most insurances. To find out more, call 301-396-3401. Make sure you tell them that Al Galdi sent you. That phone number again, 301-396-3401, or visit midatlanticskin.com. That's midatlanticskin.com. Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland, nationally recognized for treating skin cancer across the Mid-Atlantic region. So more on the Washington football team. I'd like to get into two things that came up during the 34-30 win at the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. The two things are going for it on fourth down and going for two. So we'll start with going for it on fourth down. Washington, in the win at the Falcons, went 1-for-2 on fourth downs. The fail came in the first half. Washington's second offensive drive started late in the first quarter, resulted in an early second quarter turnover on downs. Eighth snap of the drive on a 4th-and-1 at the Falcons 36, with Washington trailing 3-0 late in the first quarter. Ron Rivera went for it, and Antonio Gibson had a shotgun handoff run for no gain as the Falcons interior defensive lineman Grady Jarrett penetrated through Washington's offensive line to make half of the tackle. So that was the fail. But then in the second half, Washington's sixth offensive drive, a 14-play, 73-yard drive, resulted in Dustin Hopkins' third quarter 21-yard field goal that cut Washington's deficit to 23-22. Sixth snap of the drive on a 4th and 5 at the Falcons 39, with Washington trailing 23-19 in the third quarter. Ron Rivera went for it, and Taylor Heinicke had a 4th and 5, 10-yard shotgun completion to Curtis Samuel, who was wide open and made a nice spin move to get by the former Washington corner Fabian Moreau for yardage after the catch. Yak, as it is known. A huge play, and a play that was a result of a decision that Ron, to me, has not received enough praise for. That was a gutsy call. 4th and 5 at the Falcons 39. You're down by 4, 23-19. It's only the third quarter, so this is far from like desperation time, but Ron went for it on the 4th and 5. That took some chops. That took some cojones, especially considering how poorly Washington's defense was playing. I love the aggression from Ron, and the aggression was rewarded. I think most people by now understand that teams all along should have been going for it on fourth downs so much more often than those teams were going for it on fourth downs. I had no problems with both fourth down attempts. I thought those were perfectly acceptable decisions. You know, context always matters in going for it on a fourth down, but I thought each decision was just fine. And obviously that second decision paid off big time. I'm a little surprised that this decision hasn't been talked about more. 4th and 5 at the Falcons 39, down by just 4 third quarter. Washington goes for it, and the play succeeded beautifully. Understand, Washington now this season is 5 of 7 on fourth downs. Washington so far has actually done quite well on fourth downs, and this continues an encouraging trend for Washington under Ron Rivera. Washington in the 2020 regular season went 11 of 19 on fourth downs, good for 13th in the NFL in fourth down efficiency at 57.9%. Now, you know, 13th isn't a lead or anything like that, but given how bad Washington's offense was overall last regular season, you do anything that was top half of the league, we throw a parade for that. And Washington was rather efficient on fourth downs in the 2020 regular season. And Washington is off to a good start in fourth down efficiency this season at 5 of 7. Washington has been sneaky good on fourth downs since the start of last season, since Ron Rivera became Washington head coach. And as many of you listening know, going forward on fourth downs is where the Riverboat Ron nickname came from. And Ron had quite a bit of success on fourth downs during his time as Carolina Panthers head coach. Ron, over his 8 completed regular seasons as Panthers head coach, so we're talking about 2011 through 2018, went 56 for 99 on fourth downs. That's a success rate of 56.57%, good for number 4 in the NFL during that span. That's good. Okay, and the Panthers had some excellent seasons in terms of fourth down efficiency with Ron as head coach. 2013 regular season, Panthers went 10 for 13 on fourth downs. 2016 regular season, Panthers went 11 of 17 on fourth downs. The value in being efficient on fourth downs is so high, right? I mean, this is obvious, but you're talking about extending offensive drives, generating more points, keeping your defense off the field, keeping opposing offenses off the field, etc. This is a great skill to have as a team, being good on fourth downs. And so far, Washington has been good on fourth downs this season. However, where Washington continues to be terrible is on going for 2. So Washington, in the win at the Falcons, went 0 for 2 on two-point conversion attempts. Both of Washington's failed two-point conversion attempts came in the fourth quarter. Washington going for 2, of course, was necessitated by Dustin Hopkins having missed 2 extra point attempts earlier in the game. So Washington failed on a two-point conversion attempt that followed Taylor Heinicke's fourth quarter 1st and 10, 17-yard under center play action touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin on that miracle play that cut Washington's deficit to 30-28. What happened on this first two-point conversion attempt fail was Heinicke throwing way high on an under center play action incompletion intended for Ricky Seals-Jones. You may remember this sequence was a mess. First, we had Samuel Cosmi committing a 5-yard false start penalty, moving the line of scrimmage for the 2-point conversion attempt from the Falcons 2 to the Falcons 7. Then we had a 4-yard offside penalty on Falcons edge rusher Dante Fowler Jr., moving the line of scrimmage to the Falcons 3 and negating a Taylor Heinicke shotgun incompletion on a broken and free play. And then we had the official play, Heinicke, his shotgun incompletion intended for Seals-Jones. And then the second Washington fail on a 2-point conversion attempt in the win at the Falcons. This came after Taylor Heinicke's 3rd and 7, 30-yard shotgun touchdown pass to J.D. McKissic with 33 seconds left in the fourth quarter on that broken play that gave Washington a 34-30 lead. On this 2-point conversion attempt fail, we had a McKissic run that went nowhere. McKissic on a shotgun handoff run got buried in the backfield by Dante Fowler Jr., who came in unblocked. So Washington in the win at the Falcons, 0-for-2 on 2-point conversion attempts. Those were the first 2 2-point conversion attempts for Washington this season. Washington in the 2020 regular season went an NFL worst 0-for-5 on 2-point conversion attempts. So Washington, since the start of last season, is 0-for-7 on 2-point conversion attempts. Just for context here, the NFL as a whole in the 2020 regular season went 63-for-131 on 2-point conversion attempts, 48.08%. So, I mean, teams do convert on these 2-point conversion attempts, and some teams do really well. The Minnesota Vikings in the 2020 regular season went an NFL best 8-of-12 on 2-point conversion attempts. The Philadelphia Eagles in the 2020 regular season were number 2 in the NFL in 2-point conversion percentage and going 7-of-16. Washington, again, 0-for-5 on 2-point conversion attempts in the 2020 regular season. And Washington, 0-for-7 on 2-point conversion attempts since the start of the 2020 season. And it's not just that. Washington in the 2019 regular season went 1-for-6 on 2-point conversion attempts. So Washington, since the start of the 2019 season, is 1-for-13 on 2-point conversion attempts. The only successful 2-point conversion attempt for Washington since the start of the 2019 season came in week 11 of that 2019 season. Washington fell to 1-9 with a 34-17 loss to the New York Jets at FedEx Field. But in that game, Dwayne Haskins completed an off-schedule shotgun pass to Trey Quinn on a 2-point conversion attempt. That's it. That is the lone successful 2-point conversion attempt for Washington since the start of the 2019 season. The NFL is still not great at going for two. I mentioned the success rate last regular season, the overall league-wide success rate on 2-point conversion attempts in the 2020 regular season, 48.08%. The NFL as a whole in the 2019 regular season went 54-for-113 on 2-point conversion attempts, 47.79%. Now, I'll grant you that when you look at individual teams in seasons in terms of how those teams do on 2-point conversion attempts, I mean, these are small sample sizes, like with Washington, right? 2019 regular season, 1-of-6. 2020 regular season, 0-of-5. 2021 regular season so far, 0-of-2. So these are not massive sample sizes, obviously. It's interesting to me how infrequently teams are going for two. You know, the thinking just a few years ago was that going for two after most touchdowns might be the future of the NFL. That has not proven to be the case, even as so many teams now are going for it on fourth downs so often. Aggression on fourth downs has very much become a thing. Aggression and going for two instead of kicking the extra point attempt has not become a thing. But geez, Washington is 1-for-13 on 2-point conversion attempts since the start of the 2019 season. That's part of why it is imperative that Washington's kicker make his extra point attempts. Well, the Nationals 2021 season just ended on Sunday. The MLB postseason just got going on Tuesday night. Oh, by the way, American League wildcard game. The Boston Red Sox ripping the New York Yankees 6-2. The ex-Nat Kyle Schwarber leadoff homer in the bottom of the third on a 1-2 pitch. Was nice to see that. But we on Tuesday got our first piece of news of the Nats offseason. The re-signing of Alcides Escobar. He was set to become a free agent this offseason, and that his re-signing has been met so positively and really was considered a no-brainer really is remarkable. So this is a one-year contract. The 2022 season will be Escobar's age 35 season. Yeah, the re-signing of a guy going into his age 35 season for a retooling, if not rebuilding team in the Nats was a no-brainer. Go figure, but it's true. The Nats this past July 3rd acquired Escobar from the Kansas City Royals for cash considerations in a total desperation move. The trade came in the middle of the Nats getting swept by the Los Angeles Dodgers in a four-game series at Nationals Park. The series was perhaps the low point of the Nats' 2021 season in terms of the Nats' age and the Nats' lack of positional versatility. Lack of positional versatility was a major issue for the Nats in their 2021 season. They, due to a variety of circumstances going on at the time of this series, had backup catcher Alex Avila as a starting second baseman for what ended up being a 6-2 rain-shortened five-inning loss to the Dodgers on July 1st. Avila had never played second base in his major league career, which started in 2009 and ended with this season. And Avila, in that game, suffered bilateral calf strains. He didn't play for the Nats again until September 4th. So with that all going on, Alcides Escobar is acquired from the Royals for, again, cash considerations. This was his age 34 season. Escobar had not played in a major league regular season game since the 2018 season, during which he was among the worst players in the sport. Alcides Escobar's wins above replacement for Baseball Reference for the 2018 season was an abysmal -2.2. He was well below replacement level in that 2018 season. His career was thought to essentially be over, but Escobar ended up being the Nats' every game shortstop and number two batter for most of the rest of the 2021 season, and he was stunningly productive. Escobar in the 2021 season, over 75 games, had a wins above replacement for Baseball Reference of 1.5, more than respectable over a 75-game stretch. Escobar in the 2021 season, over 349 plate appearances, had a batting average of .288, an on-base percentage of .340, a slugging percentage of .404. You cook it all up, you normalize it, that works out to an OPS plus of 105. 100 is league average, so he was an above-average batter. Escobar was the master of, as I called it, the garbage hit. Escobar had a number of hits off weak contact and in plate appearances in which he was down at 1.02 or 1.2. But I say that as a compliment. Alcides Escobar is excellent at plate coverage and making contact, and we saw that so often this past national season. Escobar was clutch. Escobar in the 2021 season, over 76 plate appearances with runners in scoring position, had an OPS of .980. That's outstanding. And that .980 OPS was beefed up by a .561 slugging percentage. Yeah, he slugged .561 with runners in scoring position. A nit to pick might be the defense to an extent. Escobar in the 2021 season did have -4 defensive runs saved over 503 into third innings at shortstop. But Escobar also can play second base. And Escobar in the 2021 season, in playing 134 into third innings at second base, had +1 defensive runs saved. And so I look at Alcides Escobar and I say a few things. Yeah, he's older and not a true long-term piece, but he plays two key defensive positions in shortstop and second base. He has a skill that has become exceedingly rare, hitting for contact. This is only a one-year deal. This is not some massive commitment. Ideally, he's not even an everyday player for the Nats in 2022. I'd love to see Alcides Escobar be the Nats' super utility guy, like what Asdrubal Cabrera was for the Nationals. And the Nats could always trade Alcides Escobar next season if they're bad again. So yeah, I'm fine with the re-signing of Alcides Escobar. Even a rebuilding team isn't going to have every player being 25 or younger. Now, the Nats do very much need to get younger. And so to me, the Alex Avilas and Jordy Mercers and Gerardo Parras need to be gone. All due respect. But I'm willing to make an exception for Escobar, just like I'm willing to make an exception for Ryan Zimmerman, especially if there's a universal DH for next season. But this really is one of the more unlikely success stories in Nats history. Alcides Escobar becoming a sneaky productive player for the team in the 2021 season. All right, one quick item. The expected became official on Tuesday as Maryland head coach Mike Locksley announced that receiver Dante Dimas Jr. is in fact done for the season. Dimas in that hideous 51-14 loss to then number 5 Iowa in College Park this past Friday night suffered a nasty looking right leg injury on an early second quarter 6-yard kickoff return on which he committed a lost fumble. Just a brutal blow for Dimas. Dimas is so good. He, over the Terps' first 4 games this season, had 300-yard receiving games. Dimas, now famously, while being carted off the field on Friday night, shouted, "I'm coming back." I'm assuming that means from the injury, because it may not mean that he's coming back to play football for Maryland. He could just go right into the NFL draft. We'll see. Terps are at number 7 Ohio State this Saturday at noon. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show, episode 161, will feature a ton on the Washington football team off the start of its practice week on Wednesday for the game against the New Orleans Saints at FedEx Field this Sunday afternoon at 1. We anticipate both Ron Rivera and Taylor Heinicke speaking on Wednesday via post-practice press conferences, so we'll have plenty to talk about. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
You blew!